Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Leslie McClurg, in today for Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, finding love today should be easier than ever. The explosion of online dating apps has made meeting new people extremely convenient. But endless swiping is exhausting. And many folks complain profiles lack authenticity. Perhaps that's why dating apps are losing their appeal, especially among Gen Z. Studies show fewer and fewer 20-somethings are on Bumble and Hinge. So what are they doing instead? And what does love look like in the digital age? What's been your experience with dating apps? That's next after this news. From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Leslie McClurg. I'm in today for Mina Kim. The dating app Bumble laid off 30% of its workforce and is planning to relaunch in an effort to attract younger users, because one of the complaints from Gen Zers is that dating apps lack authenticity, which is important to them. But it's not just Gen Z that's jumping off the apps. People of all ages are disillusioned because online dating is a pressure cooker. It's an emotional roller coaster, can be riddled by ghosting. And yet, people are still looking for love, and they want meaningful connections. So how do we play fewer games and find more meaningful connections? We're joined today by Jean Proust. She's acting director of the Center of Public Philosophy and a lecturer at UC Santa Cruz. She's also a philosophical counseling practitioner. And Maisha Battle is a sex and dating coach. She's host of KCRW's How's Your Sex Life podcast. She's also author of Time Magazine's Real Love column, and her recent book is This Is Supposed to Be Fun, Finding Joy and Hooking Up, Settling Down, and Everything in Between. So Maisha, you know, these dating apps, they sell you on finding your exact match. But my thought about that is that that's kind of ripe for disappointment, right? No one is perfect. So how do you counsel people if they're going to get online? What's sort of the mental approach that people should have when they go online and they're looking for love?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that we talk about is how do you want to feel in your next relationship? Because I think most people start with this litany of qualities that they've maybe been told they should want in a partner. And it's really important to evaluate that and deconstruct that and usually throw it away, if I can get them to, and focus more on qualitative aspects of dating. I found my perfect match on Tinder, and I also matched with him on Hinge. But, I obviously work with people directly who do not have that exact experience and are really frustrated by some of the things that I was frustrated by as a dater. You know, you feel like you're being judged based on these superficial qualities. And, you know, I think it is really important that we notice the kind of fishbowl that we're in, where not only are we being judged by those superficial qualities, but we're also doing the same to other people. So that's the biggest piece of advice is, you know, to think about what do you want to feel? What do you want to do on a day-to-day basis with this person? How do you see them fitting into your life? You know, I do think there's also an emphasis on trying to sell yourself and your best qualities and not really think about how that's going to mesh with the lifestyle or, you know, needs of a potential partner. So I think all of that is really, really important to consider.
And Jean, you know, is trying to find the best possible sort of maximizing mentality kind of fundamentally at odds with the consideration and the nuance that it really requires to find a meaningful connection? Are these, like, the way it's set up kind of at odds with really kind of how romance works?
So, yeah, I think one thing that we should consider is re-questioning a little bit how we've been conditioned to think about love. And I think new technologies really force us to do that, to kind of revisit old concepts. And when you think about what love can be, that's just a, you know, a suggestion for a definition. You're looking for qualities, right, in somebody else. Now, a question I'm asking myself is, can we already kind of decide on what those qualities are in advance without having met the person? Because very often, in the temporality of love, in the historicity of love, which I believe has this durability element in it, we actually come to enhance qualities that were perhaps in there, you know, but not really clearly seen, or we even create qualities or trigger something that is going to generate qualities we didn't anticipate would be there in the person, or we even get to actually love qualities that we didn't know we would enjoy at all. And so I think that's also what contributes to making a relationship meaningful and perhaps reliable and stable. It has to do with precisely being able to appreciate things that we were not sure that we wanted in the first place, right? So the ability to be surprised at your own desires, I think, is an important component of what meaningful means in this context.
Absolutely. And Maisha, you know, you can really find anyone online, or at least, you know, the resume of someone that you want. Any kind of subculture is suddenly available. So how is this kind of access to like-minded people really incredibly liberating and, you know, I think, hopeful for sexual expression, sexual exploration?
Yeah, I mean, in my time both using online dating and dating apps, I've just seen this explosion of, you know, specific apps that are built for communities to connect, because predominantly what we had at the beginning was focused on heterosexual dating and very what we call vanilla sex, you know, what we also might think of as the relationship escalator. You meet, you partner for a while, there's a definition of, you know, who we are to each other. That usually takes the form of boyfriend, girlfriend. Then we're going on to get engaged, have the kids, all the things. Right. And so some of my clients want that very much, and some of my clients don't. Or some of my clients don't know what they want, but they want to explore. And I think we're living in a moment now where the industry of dating apps has fractured so much into these kind of offshoots of specialty interest. If you're interested in kink, perhaps you go to one particular site. If you're interested in polyamorous dating, you go to another, you know. And so there are choices. One such option for people who are curious is Field. Field has really been gaining a foothold in polyamorous dating. They started as an app for couples to find thirds, or, you know, the third party to find a couple. And now they've kind of really branched out to include all types of relationship structures. And they're also pretty kink friendly. You know, I've had clients give feedback that they think the Field is still pretty heteronormative in terms of like partnering, but I do think there's also there's an inclusivity once you arrive there. There's a sense that there's a place for you here, no matter what your desires are. And what I found is a lot of my clients just really appreciate that approach, even if in the end they do end up monogamously partnered. So putting them in that environment normalizes the experience of, hey, these are all people who are okay talking about sex early and often. They're okay sharing their desires, and it's not weird or creepy. They're not forcing this upon me, but we're really having a dialogue to see, are our desires in alignment? And then they may say, well, you know, I don't really see myself in a polycule, but I can take that dynamic of and that confidence that I built in that space and take it to other apps where that's maybe not the environment that's fostered by those particular apps.
But John, then is that kind of plethora of options, how does that play in with our inability to find satisfaction? Are we ever really satisfied?
You're talking straight to someone who deals with indecision pretty heavily. It's, I think the FOMO that we can experience when we're on dating apps is really, really something that can be extremely, extremely pain-inducing. But it's, and that's why, perhaps, one of the reasons why the Gen Zers are actually, you know, going away from dating apps might be just that it's just so much that then it pushes you precisely to just accumulate quantitatively without getting deeper qualitatively. And so you also focus so much on this idea of, okay, what's important about love is really the moment of falling in love, kind of the beginning, without actually making us think about, well, no, it's an investment that you make into someone that might not be the perfect match at first sight, but again, with time, might actually come to reveal and unveil all these qualities that we were talking about earlier. But I think, I mean, I'm interested into exploring what my students, who are Gen Zers, are doing right now. And we're observing really this sexual recession I was mentioning earlier, right? And it's quite concerning. And so I've been doing a bit of research of what people do. And I read your article actually in Time magazine, Maisha, and I heard about this, like, Google Docs, Date Me, which are very interesting as well. So, wait a minute, now it's about, okay, I'm going to just display out there what I really want, right? But again, how do you know what you really want? I mean, a relation. So here it's, I feel like we're perhaps valuing more assessing what we really want instead of looking at the relationship, namely, like, what is going to be the chemistry that's going to be happening, not only sexually, but on an emotional, on an intellectual, on a moral level, even with the person I'm going to meet, and how are we going to build this narrative together and enter this kind of improvisation, right? There is a beautiful image by Benjamin Bagley, I think, who speaks about the jazz improv to speak about what love is. You're just like, trying to kind of, you know, readjust with the other as time goes by, right? And so I wonder with this Google Doc Date Me if what we're doing is not, again, just putting out there just what we want, but not really taking into consideration that it's not necessarily how we're going to find something meaningful, if the meaning is to be found in the in-between and not only on the narcissistic kind of, like, you know, withdrawing into the self, right?
Absolutely. Maisha, will you tell, what are these Date Me Google Docs for folks who might not be familiar?
Yeah, when I was researching this piece, I came across this trend, and I don't know how popular it is, but it exists enough for someone to pick up on it and write about these Google Docs. So open up a Google Doc, start typing out, you know, who you are, you know, what your background is, what you might be looking for in a potential partner. Maybe you include some testimonials from your past lovers. Maybe you include a link to your calendar to help people schedule time with you to meet up. And what I found fascinating by this, I mean, even if it is existing only on a small scale, it's existing to fill a need that dating apps are not providing, which is, you know, so many people find it frustrating to move conversations into real life experiences. So a calendar link is really helpful. So many people, because they're dating outside of immediate community connections, are like, who is this person? You know, who is this person really? I can contact someone that they dated. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
That's a wild idea, I have to admit. We will continue talking about this trend. Again, we're talking about finding romantic connection online. We will be touching onto sex, so if that is a sensitive topic for listeners, for younger listeners, just a warning there. We're joined by Jeanne Proust. She's acting director of the Center for Public Philosophy and a lecturer at UC Santa Cruz. And Maisha Battle is a sex and dating coach and host of KCRW's How's Your Sex Life podcast. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. Or if you have questions for our guests, you can give us a call right now at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Give us a call.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Leslie McClurg. I'm in today for Mina Kim, and we are talking about love in the digital age and dating apps. Do they work? Are they helping you find meaningful connections? We're joined by Jeanne Proust. She's acting director of the Center for Public Philosophy and a lecturer at UC Santa Cruz. And Maisha Battle is a sex and dating coach and also the author of Time Magazine's Real Love column. Are you on a dating app? What's been your experience recently? Tell us about it. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about love in the digital age? We want to hear your comments and questions. You can email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can find us on our social channels, Twitter, X, Instagram, or Discord, or give us a call right now at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Ron writes, "Everyone I met on Match.com was different from what I imagined. What worked for me is having very many first-time meetings, as many as possible. The result, after 4 years, I met the lady who is currently my wife." Let's go to a caller, Lily in Alameda. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. Yeah, so I am also a Tinder success story. I met my husband on Tinder, and I'm just wondering what your guests have to say. It's really harkening back to what that other caller wrote in about, which is meeting in person. I found that anyone who I had like a longer time trying to get to know them via messaging or texting, when it came down to meeting them in person, that's really all it amounted to. Is I, you know, you can't figure out if someone breathes weird through texting. And I just don't know, you know, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people say like, oh, well, they have to message a certain amount, or you have to see their spelling. And I just don't know if that actually holds any water.
What do you think, Maisha?
Oh, yeah. So for some people, I really encourage them to, you know, try to progress the conversation to an in-person meeting quickly. For my clients who are more on the anxious side, the more introverted side, they may really need a lot more pre-date buildup in the form of like a safer communication mode. So messaging back and forth, maybe exchanging phone numbers and texting there, or having a video call can help them to sort of root into the process a little bit more and not get too overwhelmed, because we talked about the burden of choice that dating apps provide. And right now, I think that we really have to think about how we can use these things as tools. And they're trying to figure out how we can use them as tools based on how we've already been using them as tools. So it's this very interesting time. But there are things that are just impossible to know about someone until you meet them in person. There's so much. I mean, we are sensual beings, meaning we have five senses, and we can pick up on so much more in person through someone's presence, through certain things that are, you know, behaviors that they have that may or may not align with our values. A big thing that my clients always talk about is, well, they never ask me questions. Maybe they were able to hold their end up via text, but in person, they're just talking about themselves. They're just taking that opportunity. And it could be nerves, but I think it's really important to sort of notice those things. Notice how someone treats you. Notice how they treat the service staff. That's another big thing. Oh, they were rude to our server. How terrible. You know, what does that say about them as a person? So there's definitely, you know, more that we can get from those in-person interactions, for sure.
Well, let's go to another caller. Lara in San Anselmo, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm coming from a perspective as a single woman, now in my 50s. I started dating in my late 40s. The problem isn't the platform. The problem is the men on it. When I started dating, I chose cute pictures. I wrote out my profile in Word, so it was proof. I took it seriously. And within 5 minutes of being on the apps, it was very, very clear 99% of the men did not make that effort. And it is that lack of effort that is so demoralizing for at least single straight women of my age bracket on the apps.
Any advice then, Maisha, for the men out there? Because there is several comments in my feed here about the men are just not showing up in a really authentic or, you know, trustworthy way.
Yes, this definitely shows up in my practice for sure. You sound like one of my clients. So this is very familiar. For men out there, this, buy my book. I think it's really helpful. And I have worked with clients now who have read my book and are men and are very like thoughtful about this process and really take it seriously, no matter what they're looking for. But there is, you know, an assumption that if I just stick something up there, they will come. And it's for my female clients who are so thoughtful and careful, that can feel like a slight, like I'm putting in all of this work. Where are you in this process? What can you add to my life? Like, I don't even know because I can't tell who you are based on what you're giving me. Just a picture and no text. Like, that's what we're dealing with here out there. I mean, for those of you who have not been on a dating site, that's what we're talking about. So yes, I think there's a lot that can be gleaned through introspection, educating yourself on like, what it is that people need from you in order to make a good decision. And then, you know, best practices for dating. So this is all in my book. This is supposed to be fun.
And just on that, if I may, I think indeed we're facing an inequality in terms of, you know, gender with, you know, within the context at least of heteronormativity. We do find that it benefits men more than women. It can also be questioned, right? A lot of men actually are complaining about the fact that it's not that easy for them either, right? But we do find that situation where dating apps might be promoting the hookup culture in a certain way, which I'm not against. I do value certain things about sex positivity, for instance, but I do believe that we can only get real sexual freedom or real relationship freedom, love freedom, call it whatever you want, through dating apps if we also have, or through hookup culture, if we also have an equal foot within it. And we don't have that equal foot yet. I do believe that, you know, still to this day, women who engage in sexual encounters, you know, frequently are going to not have the same kind of social prestige than men who do the same. And so if we don't solve this issue first and foremost, I believe that it's kind of normal to find women actually, you know, being potentially mistreated. I'm thinking about this website actually, or is it like this Facebook page called Are We Dating the Same Guy?
Oh, yes.
Well, you find a lot of women who are complaining about the way they're being treated by men on this website. And I mean, I totally get it. And so just to go back also on the preceding phone call, I just wanted to point out that perhaps indeed, instead of being so oversensitive to digital body language, which is kind of like what dating online is inviting us to do, right? We are like very sensitive to, okay, are they double texting? Or are they just like, how long do they take to answer me?
Which are they going to ghost you?
Right. Which emoji are they putting, etc. So maybe now let's switch to real body language. And we do need the smell. We do need the voice in order to feel if there is something going on. Though, to play devil's advocate again, because I cannot help it, that's that's my training. I would say even if you meet someone and you're sensitive to what your five senses are telling you, do not overtrust them also, because it's, again, with time, I believe, on maybe second, third date that you start maybe appreciating certain things that the nervousness of the first encounter might not reveal in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So if they hold their fork wrong, maybe you should give them a second chance.
Right.
All right. Let's go to Christian in Reading. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. What a wonderful conversation today. I am a therapist for trauma and addiction in Reading, California, and I had a question just about technology in this generation with Gen Zers. If technology actually makes them more immature in social settings, and does that drive some addictions where it's just hard for people to meet face-to-face? You know, they're on media and technology, and when they meet someone face-to-face, it's more awkward for them, and if that technology drives them to more unnormative sexual behavior.
Maisha?
Well, you know, I know right now that there is a lawsuit against, I think, Twitter and Match Group because they have basically admitted on Nancy Jo Sales' documentary Swiped that the technology behind the swipe and match was based off of B.F. Skinner's research on, you know, how to keep people engaged. So giving them basically intermittent feedback. So when you get that hit of it's a match, for instance, our brains really respond to that. And it can foster certain addictive behaviors. I don't think Gen Z is predisposed to that more than any other generations. I think that's one of the things that we're really seeing, is that this has been detrimental across the board. What I can say is that what I've been thinking about is the fact that Gen Z has grown up as the first generation with, you know, access to smartphones, you know, basically from birth, and just tech mediated interactions generally, I think does change the way that they behave in social settings, both online and in person. One of the things I think about is, can you imagine your whole life has been documented by your parents on an app where things are liked, upvoted, or, you know, said that they're cringe or whatnot. Mm-hmm. You develop your own social media presence. Mm-hmm. You go through that whole churn again. And now you're in a sensitive environment where you're being judged for being a good partner. Your value as a partner is basically up for, you know, debate. Those of us who kind of toe the line between pre-internet and post-internet kind of have this like, oh yeah, it's a thing, but like, who cares? Or, you know, it sucks to be rejected or whatnot. But when your whole life has been sort of put through this mechanism of upvote, downvote, likes, hearts, emojis, all of that, mm-hmm. or you're terrible, why did you say that? Attacking, bullying, all of these things. I think it can feel for them a lot more personal and a lot more sensitive. And so, you know, perhaps they're just a generation that's highlighting what was already wrong because they've been more exposed to it.
Right. I do believe also that there is this kind of blurriness between private and public today that makes it a bit harder. So this awkwardness might be seen, I guess, on two levels. On the one hand, there is really like this, like just the self-branding that we observe, right, that where basically you're so focused on whatever validation you might receive from how you put yourself out there on, you know, display, on public display. And that is either at the level of when you're starting dating, right, or later on for people, for instance, who just want to advertise their Wikiversary, for instance, of love. And this way also perhaps shaming the people who are not in love, but also really focusing on how their public image is actually gathering all these likes and like this kind of promotion of the self, you know, perpetually. And I think here you come down to a kind of a triangularity that's interesting, where it's not so much about the other person that you're supposed to love in your relationship, but it's about the validation or perhaps even the envy you actually are looking for in the eyes of the people who are going to look at your profile online. And, you know, so that I think creates definitely something pretty interesting in this generation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More to say there, but let's get another caller into the conversation. Sandy in San Jose, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. What I find the most alarming in my many years of online dating experience is the lack of social skills or just basic conversation skills that most men have, whether it's online via text or in person. There seems to be no effort or no consciousness of, hey, let me ask her a question. Let me engage. They tend to write a lot of statements, and then I feel like I'm the one who has to create the conversation and take the initiative. And that just sets the precedent of, oh, I guess I'm going to be the one asking all the questions. And it's just frustrating when you're sitting there and nobody's really taking an interest in you, whether it's over text or, you know, in person. And that just seems to be such a basic social skill that I'm surprised that I see it as much as I do.
Thank you so much, Sandy, for that call. Before we hear from our experts, I'd love to hear from Steve in San Francisco. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Good, thanks.
My thing is, I would say be open to talk to people out and about. If you're at the gym, at the bar, I find, because I never really liked the platforms, because to me, I found them pretentious. Because it's like you're reading somebody's autobiography, but I would like to know the person actually in person. You know, strike up a conversation. You know, when you try to strike up a conversation, people tend to just brush you off. But you never know who that person is until you talk to them. So you know in the first minute how that person is going to be. Because if I'm interested in you in that first minute, then I'm going to continue to talk to you. If I'm not, then I'm going to just say, oh, you have a nice day. So I think people need to be more open out and about instead of trying to be online. Try communicating with people out in the real world. That's how I see it, because that's how I, before the internet, that's what we used to do before.
Right. We might have a generational gap here, because a lot of Gen Zers find it kind of awkward when somebody just comes to them and just out of the blue just talk into the in the wild, right? When they meet
terrifying.
In the wild, it's terrifying. And we're facing this like fear of rejection that is so intense, and all these insecurities due precisely to this like and digital display we were talking about earlier. But I think we need to precisely relearn to do that, relearn to feel okay by just, you know, talking to someone, yeah, at the gym, in the street, in the bar, whatever. We lost this ability and we switched to, or did we switch actually, I wonder. We had perhaps a social etiquette that was kind of, I guess now, retrospectively, I guess, working, and we didn't have the time to really build a digital etiquette. And I heard what the preceding caller was saying about the fact that, I heard that so many times, about the fact that men are just speaking about themselves. And I wonder if it's also not due to precisely this, like, I'm putting myself out there. It's about myself, and that's what the digital display is about. It's not about the exchange. And so, yes, let's relearn how to talk to people randomly, but also how to listen to people randomly in the street, right? It's not only about talking about oneself, it's about being able to engage into a conversation, so a dialogue, namely something that happens between two people, right?
Yeah. I want to address, too, that, you know, patriarchy does a disservice to men in that women are more likely to be socialized to be social creatures, to take on the majority of tending in our social relationships. How are you doing? How do you feel? These are things that we're very, very comfortable addressing with one another and we're curious about. I don't think that that's innate. I believe that, you know, through socialization, men too tend to get rewarded by achievement. And so we're seeing that play out on the dating stage. I think we did see it before there was, you know, app-based dating. But now we're kind of in this, you know, sticky period where things are happening in this digital space that we don't have the tools really to use. And so we're using what we've got, and what we've got doesn't quite work, because we're saying, okay, just use these apps to start talking to each other to get a feel for one another. And it's sometimes impossible when you have people who feel, you know, on one side of the gender spectrum, you know, they feel that that's not really valid or like necessary for getting to know someone. Men in general tend to talk about things and definitely focus more on their accomplishments and their achievements and the things that they're proud of. And that's no coincidence. So I think we also have a socialization issue there. And we're all just sort of swimming in this fishbowl of patriarchy, and we don't quite understand how that's playing out on a one-to-one scale.
Well, we will get some tips on potentially how to do that better. We're about to go into a break, but we are talking about romantic connections online. We're joined by Jean Proust, acting director of the Center for Public Philosophy and a lecturer at UC Santa Cruz. And Maisha Battle is a sex and dating coach. And her recent book is This Is Supposed to Be Fun, Finding Joy and Hooking Up, Settling Down and Everything in Between. Are you on a dating app? We want to hear about it. How has your experience gone? Have dating apps and social media made it easier, made it harder for you to find someone? Email your comments and questions to forum@kqed.org. You can find us on our social channels, Twitter, X, Instagram, Discord, or give us a call, 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Stay with us.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Leslie McClurg. I'm in today for Mina Kim, and we are talking about dating apps and finding love and in the digital age. Again, we're joined by Jeanne Proust. She's acting director of the Center for Public Philosophy and a lecturer at UC Santa Cruz. And Maisha Battle is a sex and dating coach. She's also the host of KCRW's How's Your Sex Life podcast. Vicky on Instagram writes, I have been on and off dating apps for about 20 years since my second divorce. I have met many nice men and had several really good relationships, and I'm currently in a wonderful relationship with a man I met online. But I'm in my 60s, and I'm looking for something much different, a sexual and fun companion, which is something I was looking for in my 20s and 30s. However, I probably would have been very unhappy with the apps if I was looking for that age frame. Maisha, that brings up the question, you know, how is it different for different demographics, either age or, you know, are apps more successful for certain, you know, groups of people, but not so great for other groups of people?
Mm-hmm. I just first want to acknowledge that this person is in their 60s and really wanting to, like, focus on their sex life. I think they're going to have a fantastic time.
Great.
Because after I wrote the Time piece about Gen Z dating, I got, you know, some feedback about how women from Gen X and even boomers are noticing that Gen Z's really love them. Intergenerational dating is something that I think we don't really talk that much about, especially when it's an older woman. But I think she's going to be fine. I think she's going to have a really fun, wild time.
I feel like I just dated myself with my wow comment. I was like, wow, this is really happening. But that's... Let's go to Laura in Berkeley. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm no longer on any of the dating apps, and the reason for me is that, you know, I love just about any topic, and I would correspond with these men, and we get in these deep discussions about history or politics or, you know, all kinds of things. And it was like, wow, this is a really great guy. And then I'd meet them in person, and they weren't that person. It's like they were, it's almost like they were journaling to me, getting out all of the stuff on the inside in writing, but in person they couldn't do it. And it was just the weirdest thing. I'm like, what is wrong here? So I'm, you know, I met other men other than those. There were three in particular. I met a lot of other men and went on dates, and it just didn't work out. But I kind of think that, you know, maybe I'm wanting too much from the relationship. I want someone that's willing to sit down and, you know, solve the problems of the world one time to time. But I wasn't getting that, and I'm really open and honest about what I need. And these men responded appropriately to what I said about myself on the dating app, but they just weren't that person when you met them in person.
Jeanne, what about sort of the online personality or online abilities compared to your real life abilities?
First, I love the fact that you want to, you know, speak about the world and having all these big questions. I mean, yeah, it should be also a philosophical moment. Why not, right? I just, I don't know exactly what to say here, but I think maybe that part is important to actually say what kind of conversations you want to have and be able to, again, have the connection be not only necessarily only physical or emotional, but also perhaps a bit intellectual as well, where you want companionship in a way that has actually also some deeper meaning than just, you know, being together and finding that affection. And here it brings me back to the idea that perhaps what we are looking for, and this is interesting because we always have to think, okay, when we speak about dating apps, what are the dating apps promising us that they're going to do, and how that, of course, is not often exactly what's happening in reality, especially when dating apps make more money when you stay hooked to the app. So they don't want you to have necessarily a long, durable relationship with one person, but they'd rather you just, you know, multi-date and keep being kind of on the hook. So that's also, you know, maybe by design, something that might be problematic within dating apps. I wonder what you think about that, Maisha.
Yeah, this feels like a continuation of earlier comments that we heard where, you know, this online interaction feels like it's going nowhere, but then you start to make progress and then you meet someone who is promising in person, and it kind of fizzles out. So, yeah, I mean, this is just, it's really common. What I really just want this person to hear is that you're not asking too much. You know, you're...
Yeah.
deep thinker, and that's how you get fed, I would say sexually even. I mean, there are people who get turned on by the fact that they're having these really emotional exchanges or thoughtful intellectual exchanges. And so that might be you, and that's what you need. And there are people, because you exist, other people like you exist. I just want you to hear that.
Mm-hmm. And so where then should Laura find that person?
I think it's just a matter of putting that forward, maybe more forward in her profile, but also, philosophy meetups, in-person groups centered around this idea of big ideas, like, you know, book clubs and things like that, I think could be fantastic for this person to meet another thinker.
In fact, Gen Zers are also, you know, trying to use social media just as they are in order to feel like-minded people. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm promoting the idea that we should only date like-minded people, which is another question we could explore. I think it's important to be open to otherness, to real alterity as well, and not being so focused on, I want people who think just like me. But it seems to me that the person who called actually is looking for conversation with people who not necessarily agree with
her.
Right. And
yeah.
That's what I love about this. And indeed, then, you know, not through dating app, but perhaps through other, you know, whatever activities that are out there that are being advertised online or within the communities around her, you know, I think there is a lot of opportunities to meet people who are interested in this kind of like intellectual friendship that you seem to be looking for.
Well, and Michael wants to help you out too, Laura. Michael tweets, an acquaintance of mine over 60 meets guys while salsa dancing. She uses apps, but online conversations seldom end in dates. So just get out there, in other words, Laura. Mm-hmm. A listener writes, any tips for people that are neurodivergent? Is it better to be upfront? I don't want to be rude. Maisha?
Yeah. I work with clients who are neurodivergent, who deal with mental health issues of all kinds. So my philosophy on this is to disclose when you feel comfortable disclosing. So for some people, it's so integral to their personality and how they're going to come across to a potential dater that that information can actually be helpful for someone to know, you know, this is what I'm dealing with. And so this is kind of how this interaction might go for me, you know? And I'm thinking about like clients who are really anxious too. I think this is really helpful for people to know how to read you. Otherwise, they're going to be having this, you know, very normative filter on their interactions with you, which may not give you permission to be fully yourself, or they may judge you or think like, oh, that was weird the way that they did that or said that. So having that context can be really helpful. That being said, it's your choice whenever you disclose that. So I've had clients who, you know, have really waited until they felt really safe and comfortable with someone before they've disclosed that information.
Let's bring Frank into the conversation. Frank in Mill Valley, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm a Match.com success story of some 13 years standing, which I know in internet time is like 26 generations. But the 2 points. One is about the utility of exchanging, in effect, written documents before or as part of the dating process. I had this feeling like I was writing to somebody in church in the 1800s. You know, dear Miss Phillips, I've long admired your bonnet or whatever. And then all of a sudden, I found that it encouraged the kind of conversation that you folks are talking about being absolutely necessary at some point, where you start to get a sense of the person's intellectual interests and speed and all the other stuff. That being said, the 30 seconds that you first meet somebody is dispositive, right? I could write somebody letters for months, and it all hangs on whatever that hindbrain reaction is to a human body. And I'm not talking about looking at somebody. It's just when you're in somebody's presence, I mean, I think you guys have all been touching on it. There's something that happens that in a dating context is an up or down flag, and nothing you do can change it, at least as far as I find. Any thoughts about that, you know, either of those concepts?
I think...
I don't know if the Gen Zers write a lot, but I found it comfortable.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what you're saying is true. There is something to that. And I think it's incredibly vulnerable, so much so that, you know, people are really going out of their way to figure out how to bypass meeting people in person. I mean, we've got you know, the girlfriends online. I can't remember like the actual phrase for it, but it's basically like, you know, you have a chatbot girlfriend. There are sex bots, you know, there are definitely like we're moving some of us in this direction of how do we get past that awkward space where we have to make a judgment in person of somebody else's physicality, or how do we avoid the tenderness of being judged for our physicality? You know, maybe it's opting out of this whole physical experience altogether. So, I can't overstate how important it is to meeting people in person and getting that feedback. And I do think we're seeing a lot of dating apps have actually started offering in-person events because they also know that what they've been offering isn't cutting it. So there's this kind of twofold trend of like people opting out completely and then dating apps trying to be more human.
Well, a listener writes, I am Gen Z, and I have only dated people through dating apps. I have met nice partners on the apps, but there is definitely a struggle of meeting them one-on-one and not being able to witness how they interact with the world until you start dating them for a longer duration. You can't observe them and get excited about them as you can in the traditional crushing phase of meeting in person. Additionally, all dating app meetings seem to immediately force a romantic undertone, and there's no chance to step back and say, you'd prefer to just be friends. You actually like this person, but you just want to be your friends. Jean, I have noticed that dating online, you know, you sit down and you're immediately evaluating, like, is this the person? Am I feeling it? Am I, could I fall in love with this person? So is that kind of false projection, not false projection, but that mission kind of missing some of the essence of life that's fun, like just to get to know someone that could be just a good friend?
Right. And I think actually it happens very often in dating apps that people end up actually being friends and remain friends for a long time, even if the romantic aspect didn't necessarily, you know, click. And I think that's one of the beauty of dating apps. And here I really don't want to sound like a techno-pessimist or a doomer of any sort. I think there are beautiful things with dating apps that are actually very helpful also in a way for a lot of people who precisely feel a bit awkward without having first, you know, found that comfort of exchanging first. So it's really, it depends on the person, while not, you know, underestimating that indeed, I think, you know, presence, you know, being in the physical presence of the other is very important. I think it's also... it's also something, I mean, we can cultivate all sorts of friendship online that then become actually real. And I think we should totally be able to do that. And I think it's also important regarding the physical presence to think about the social surrounding, right? So when we used to date, what was also like back in the day in courtship even, for instance, it was very important to know the kind of, to contextualize a person, to be able to actually embed the encounter within a social context. So being through family or friends, at least we had kind of a rough idea where, you know, where this person stands. Oh, what are their friends looking like? What kind of places they like to hang out? Well, like seeing all that and seeing even like the family or whatever shed some light on the person that now with you know, meeting online people, we don't necessarily have that. I mean, with social media, I guess we can have an idea of what people like on TikTok or whatever, but it's again, it's what people want you to believe that they like, or it's the way they publicly kind of say they look like, right? But it's I'm not sure it quite goes to the authenticity of what the person is. And it's kind of nice to be able to go back to, okay, within that bar, I'm meeting this person. And here I'm thinking about the first question about neurodivergence. I think it's important to think about connection also, perhaps not necessarily on a one-on-one thing, but also, you know, how about you, maybe I come with a friend or two and you come also with a friend of two, and we can have like a conversation, you know, together as, you know, six, five, seven people, it doesn't matter, to like start the conversation to feel perhaps more comfortable than just on a one-on-one setting.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Leslie McClurg. I'm in for Mina Kim today, and we are talking about love in the digital age and dating apps. We're joined by Marshall now in San Ramon. Marshall, you're on the air.
Hey. I've got a lot of experience in the dating apps. For instance, in Southern California, it was very easy to find a date in the Inland Empire, Corona area. It was very easy for many years. And then I moved up to Northern California, and it was very difficult. The scenery on the dating apps in Northern California were really sketchy. I don't know if it was the ones I was using, but I pretty much used the same ones as I was in Southern California. and there was a lot of scams and just like, I don't know, the women weren't as attractive. It was very different. And I've also used dating apps and talked to women in different countries, which is actually pretty cool because it's a totally different dynamic. There's a lot of emphasis on person to person. So I don't know if there's a dating app out there that you can like do a video back. Like you're like on a video call with somebody.
Well, like, I think Marshall
wasting your time.
Yeah. I mean, I think Maisha, it seems like apps are really trying to change. I mean, I know, you know, Hinge is trying to offer audio and video, and they're really trying to make it a more dynamic experience. Do you feel like that trend is going to, you know, hopefully maybe help some of folks with these frustrations?
Yeah, I also just want to acknowledge, like, how much dating apps have changed. This may not have, like, it could feel like a change of scenery, but it could also be just a change in how dating apps are and how they're evolving. So there's a lot more spam. There's a lot more bots on there now than there ever has been. This really wasn't a thing when apps were new. There's a lot more feeling like you have to pay to play. You know, you've got to like pay to get all the features that would make your life so much easier now. So, you know, I hesitate to sort of say, you know, dating apps are different from here to here. I mean, yes, obviously we have microcultures, so dating is going to be different. But I think your dating experience could also be colored by the fact that, you know, dating apps have changed so much over the last 10 years.
We have 2 minutes left. So if you could design the perfect app or make a recommendation to our listeners, final thoughts.
Oh, my goodness.
How about no pictures?
There has been an app with no pictures.
Yes,
Lex.
I heard that. That's great.
Yeah. So that's really great. I think that in my perfect world, we wouldn't be using apps. In my perfect world, we would have a society that supported people meeting each other organically. And what I mean by that is that people don't just get on the relationship escalator and stay on it and forget that they have single friends. That as they're kind of moving into their next phase of life, they're thinking about their friends still as community that also needs the support of love and companionship, and that we should be looking out for each other. I think more and more when I do events, people are asking about matchmaking. And it's such a beautiful thing that unfortunately, capitalism has really made kind of terrible, but that's for another show. So I think we can all think of ourselves as personal matchmakers in our community. Think about the people around you who might enjoy each other's company and connect them.
Well, this conversation, we want to continue it. I think it will evolve over time. Thank you both so much for your time. Again, we were joined by Jean Proust, acting director of the Center for Public Philosophy and lecturer at UC Santa Cruz, and Maisha Battle, sex and dating coach, host of KCRW's How's Your Sex Life podcast. Thank you, Mark Naito, for producing the show today. And thank you to our listeners for calling in. Have a wonderful day.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.